I'm Sheila Cast, and this is Midday. Breaking news in the police trials related to Freddie Gray's death. We'll start with an update from WIPR reporter Kenneth Burns. Then, the three men vying to be the Green Party nominee for mayor of Baltimore. The Green Party will hold its own primary just after the one in late April for Democrats and Republicans. Joshua Harris is an activist and organizer. Until recently, he was running as a Democrat. Emmanuel McCray is a community organizer and Army veteran. This is his second bid for mayor. And David Marriott, former police officer and Marine, is running for the first time. We'll discuss housing, jobs, police reform, schools, and what you want to ask the Green Party candidates. It's midday, right after the news from NPR. Welcome to Midday, everybody. I'm Sheila Cast. I'm very glad you're with us today. We have a lot to talk about this hour. In a few minutes, we're going to meet the Green Party candidates for mayor of Baltimore. But first off, the news that the Court of Appeals, Maryland's highest court, has ruled that Baltimore police officer William Porter can be compelled to testify against the other officers charged in the death of Freddie Gray 11 months ago. WIPR reporter Kenneth Burns, who's covering the police trials, is here with more. Welcome to the show, Kenny.
Thank you again.
So specifically, what did the court issue today?
The court issued two orders. One order upholding the order forcing to Porter to testify during the trials of Sergeant Alicia White and Officer Caesar Goodson. Goodson's the van driver and Sergeant White was the supervisor in the field. The other order addressed a prosecution request to force Porter to testify for the remaining officers, Officers Garrett Miller, Edward Nero, and Lieutenant Brian Rice. And that the judge in that case, Circuit Judge Barry Williams, denied that request, but the Court of Appeals overturned that decision and asked Judge Williams to honor that request and compel Porter to testify.
So as it stands now, Officer Porter, whose own trial ended in a hung jury, mm-hmm. and therefore he could be tried again.
Well, he will be tried again. He'll be tried again in June.
But before then, he'll be required to testify in all these other trials.
Yes.
Did the court address the arguments that Porter's lawyers made against this a week ago?
The court is going to address those arguments later. This morning, what they did was issue the order, and the order literally says, for reasons to be in a written decision later, this is what we want. And so once that decision is issued, we'll get a look at what the justices were.
What their line of reasoning was.
Yes.
But give us a little background. Why did Officer Porter not want to testify in these other cases?
His lawyers argued that since the prosecution called him a liar in his trial back in December, then the state would be encouraging Porter to perjure himself or lie on the stand. And that's really what started this rolling, because they had already subpoenaed Porter to arrive to testify at the trial, but the issue in January was forcing him to testify. And they proved that, in fact, Porter took the stand during that time and said, I'm going to use my Fifth Amendment privilege if you call me to testify. And that got the ball rolling as far as compelling him to testify.
So if he tries to invoke his Fifth Amendment privilege,
he can't. He will have to talk.
And so what is the implication then for these other trials?
Well, we'll get a sense of what happened that day. We already have a little bit of it, because during the first trial, the statement that he gave to officers was played in court. And we'll also get a little peek into what happened in the conversation between himself and Officer Goodson, because Officer Goodson is the only officer he did not give a statement at all.
And what's the implication for Porter's own trial?
That remains to be seen, whether that trial even takes place. I question just looking at it, because you have five trials, and then by the time Porter's trial comes around in June, you have to have a tank team or a completely separate prosecution team that's in the dark as far as what's happening with these other five trials, because Porter's testimony in these trials will be protected under immunity. It can't be held against them.
So what is the thing that happens next? What is the very next step in this whole process?
The very next step is to see when's the next available court dates for all of these trials. Everything that has been scheduled for the other five officers, we passed those dates. So everyone has to look at their calendar to see how this will all play out, whether or not Porter's trial gets pushed back to get to these other officers, because they've already said they wanted their speedy trial. They wanted to get it over with.
Kenny, you'll keep us up to date?
I will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot. And now to politics. That was WIPR reporter Kenneth Burns, and now we're going to turn to politics. It has been 50 years since Baltimore City had anything other than a Democrat as mayor. As a result, the Democratic primary is often treated as if it were the general election. But there are alternative candidates. This election cycle, the open mayoral seat has drawn even more than usual. Five Republicans and three Green Party candidates are running. The Baltimore Green Party was formed in 2000 and has run candidates in every election since. The state of Maryland does not allow for a taxpayer-funded third-party primary, but the Green Party will hold its own vote to select a nominee on May 1st. All three Green Party candidates are with us today. Joining me in the studio is community organizer Joshua Harris. Harris is the co-founder of Holland's Creative Placemaking, a nonprofit that uses urban art to spur revitalization. He serves on several community boards and previously worked as a legislative aide. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Let me ask you the question I'm going to ask everybody. Why are you running for mayor?
Well, Baltimore is at a very unique point in time, a turning point, and I believe that we need to have leadership that is truly invested and committed to people first, people over profit. And so having that understanding, my goal, of course, is to make sure that every single citizen and most importantly, every single child has equal opportunity and equal access to be successful. And I believe that I'm the best candidate to do that.
And we'll talk more about why in a few minutes, but I want to introduce David Marriott, who is joining us by phone. David Marriott is a former police officer, a Marine vet, and an entrepreneur. I'm very glad you could join us. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you for having me.
And David Marriott, why are you running for mayor?
I'm running for mayor because Baltimore has quite a few issues right now, and one of the biggest issues that we have is education. We have a police department that's failing, and these are issues that I'm very familiar with, and these are things that I know how to fix. We have to build from ground up and just take someone who knows how to do that, and I'm the guy. I'm the guy who's best for the city.
Okay, we'll talk more about that, too. And here in the studio with me is Emmanuel McCray. McCray is an Army and National Guard veteran and a leadership organizer at United Workers, a human rights organization led by low-wage workers. This is Emmanuel McCray's second run for mayor. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And why are you running for mayor?
The reason why I'm running is I've been here, in Baltimore long enough to see the direction it has gone. And it's definitely been a fair, basically failed development, pretty much, and all that. And I just see, like, it's basically, I can agree with Josh, it's basically about profits and not about people. And being amongst the people and seeing what's the problems and know what's like the struggle and all, I feel it's my time and it's my lifelong dream to rise to above and stand up and to try to change the status quo that been going on for so long.
Joshua Harris, you co-founded Holland's Creative Placemaking, which is just a challenging name right off the bat. For those of us who don't know about it, it's a nonprofit. It uses art to foster urban revitalization. What does that mean, and what would you do as mayor to spur revitalization?
Well, it's extremely important to understand what placemaking is and what Holland's Creative Placemakers does, because all too often cities take the narrative to generate revenue and to grow the city, they invest in infrastructure. But what we do know is that no matter how many buildings we tear down, no matter how many new buildings we put up, if we aren't investing in people, we're not developing solutions to problems. We're simply displacing them. And people who end up simply being displaced because they can no longer afford to live where this new fancy infrastructure is. So what placemaking does is focuses on the people and creating an environment of belonging versus disbelonging. So we want to make sure that development is an inclusive process and that we are fostering the people and growing the people that exist in the community so that they are able and have the ability to grow and develop develop as the infrastructure around them grows. And so that's really what creative placemaking focuses on doing, making sure that we avoid the pitfalls of gentrification. And we're focused on total development, which is the most important part, is the people aspect and people component of it.
And how does that prepare you to be mayor?
Well, I mean, we're dealing with the perfect examples of it right now all across the city. If you look at East Baltimore and what's happened and how families have been displaced and not allowed to go back, even though promises were made. If you look in Southwest Baltimore, where our city council just gave away $17.5 million to the University of Maryland Biopark and Wexford Science and Technology, their developer, who happens to be owned by Blackstone Corporation, one of the wealthiest corporations in the world, that did not need our $17 million in tax dollars, my tax dollars, your tax dollars. They didn't need it for that development, but our city council gave it away to them while the community just one block away with some of the highest concentrations of poverty asked to be included in a community benefits agreement where they requested included in that was were things that would be set in place that would create jobs, train people for those jobs, and ultimately work towards raising median family household income in Baltimore City, which is really what we need to get. Because until we get to addressing issues of poverty in our city and understanding how that works hand in hand with our development as a city, we're not really looking for change. And so that's where that plays a role in understanding how all those components fit together.
That is Joshua Harris, one of three men running for the Green Party nomination for Baltimore City Mayor here on Midday on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Also here with me in the studio is Emmanuel McCray, and joining us by phone is David Marriott, also candidates. You can be part of this conversation. We welcome your questions. Phone us at 410-662-8780 or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. Emmanuel McCray, you became involved with United Workers Association after being laid off from a restaurant in the Inner Harbor. Is that a formative experience for you in why you're running for mayor?
When I became a member of United Workers, it actually changed my whole political philosophy. I mean, prior to that, I've probably been an opponent of what my organization been going for, because studying political science in my college years, interning over the years off and on when I was out the military, in between during my reserve time, I was all about joining organizations, being that whole that next man mentality in Baltimore politics. And at a time where I was just a restaurant employee, and seeing how a major it gets shut down, it just like the human cost, it really affected me and all that, and let alone a lot of workers, because I mean, I believe myself, I could overcome adversity and all that, but to see like fellow coworkers suffering, and it kind of like just changed my whole views on things, because the company was actually owned by Disney. I'm like, wow, it affected me in a way like I don't want to support nothing Disney, give my children Disney products and all because of that situation. So to learn to fight for the Warren Act, to fight this major company, it was motivation enough for me to even like, hey, I want to make a change totally and all that. And it's a system that's designed to keep people down, and a lot of promises that the Inner Harbor had offered when it was open back in the early 80s under the Schaefer administration, they've broken those promises to the workers who work at the Inner Harbor.
So we have to take a break in just a minute. Can you fast forward that and tell me then how that connects to what you're proposing to do as mayor?
What I propose to do as mayor is pretty much I'm trying to break down our public funds need to be going to public good. A lot of our money is going to private interests, and we see the direction where the city has gone and has failed.
As I said, we're going to take a quick break here. David Marriott, I owe you the first question. When we come back from this break, we're going to talk more with David Marriott, with Emmanuel McCray, and with Joshua Harris, all running to be mayor of Baltimore on the Green Party ticket. But first, on this last day of WIPR's Winter Pledge Drive, if you haven't made a pledge, here's Andy Beanstock to tell you how. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. Today we're talking to three candidates for Baltimore City Mayor who are running for the Green Party nomination. Given the city's history as a one-party town, you may not have heard much about Emmanuel McCray, David Marriott, and Joshua Harris, but they are running on the Green, in the Green Party. They are here with us right now, and you can ask them a question. You can send us an email at midday@wypr.org, or you can phone us. Our number is 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780. David Marriott, you are a former police officer. Was that with the Baltimore Police?
No, it wasn't. It was with Prince George's.
And you have said you left that force because of a flawed system. Explain that.
Prince George's County is not the only department with flawed issues. It's a lot of police departments. And what those issues are basically is, at the end of the day, they have an old school mentality of policing. Each community is treated differently. It's nothing equal across the board. And I have the solution to those issues. I have the solution to that problem.
What is the solution?
Change. The solution to that problem is community policing. We need our police officers to be more proactive in the communities. And we as citizens, we haven't held them at a higher level of responsibility. We've let them take the ball and run with it for so many years. If we're involved, if we dictate how our police departments are ran, we won't have all these issues of violence and these police officers that are being hired from outside of our communities to come in and patrol and police us. You can't have someone come in from another community that doesn't understand anything about your community and dictate to you how things are supposed to be done. And once we're able to do that, all the crime that you see in these communities will go down. All the shootings of our young African-Americans will go down. And you will see a reduction in homicides. You'll see a reduction in crime overall. Politicians over the years, they don't have the experience. They don't have the knowledge. And this is what it takes. It takes someone who understands what's really going on behind these closed doors that these officers are dealing with. And if you don't understand that, you're not going to be able to fix the issue.
There certainly has been a lot of attention to the phrase community policing in the last 11 months. And I believe the commissioner, Kevin Davis, would say that the Baltimore police are now doing community policing. How would you assess what is going on now in Baltimore policing?
I understand the plan that Kevin Davis has. I get where he's trying to go with it. However, his community policing is on a smaller scale in comparison to what I'm talking about. He's doing what he can do within the powers that he's been given. Kevin Davis, at the end of the day, has no power. The power comes from the mayor. The power comes from the city council. And it's up to them to dictate what needs to be done to the police officers and to the policing department, to the commissioner. Once these policies are put into place, it's up to the commissioner to then enforce it with his police officers. You can't ask someone who is the driver of the bus to fix the car. You can't ask the driver of the bus to take it home and maintain the brakes. Everybody has their role to play. And Kevin Davis is only playing the role he's been given, as best as he can, sure. But at the same time, there's other things that need to be accomplished. And the policies need to be changed. The actions of the police officers, they need to be scrutinized a little bit better. And the police officers, at the same time, they need to be given a certain level of trust and understanding in certain communities to be able to do their jobs. I'm not picking on police officers, and I'm not against police officers. What it is police officers... If you're not giving them good policies and good procedures to go about policing your community, if you're not instructing them properly, they're just like anybody else. They're not going to do the job that they were hired to do. They're going to actually say, you know what? I was hired to do this job. I thought it was something else, but now I'm caught into something that I never intended to be in.
Let me expand this and ask your two competitors who are here with me in the studio what they would do about police community relations. Joshua Harris?
Yes. And so I've been at several of the public safety meetings with Commissioner Davis and the current mayor, and I asked the same questions, as I'm sure as they're tired of hearing it, is when are we going to move towards community-based policing models? And so what Commissioner Davis has effectively done is that they've just changed back to post command, which is actually a good step, so that you have an officer that can become familiar with the community. They'll be consistently in a community, and they're expanding foot patrols, which are two components of community-based policing model. But understanding that there's a major restoration of relationships that has to occur in our police department, and that's restoration relationships between the police police and the community and the community and the police. It goes two roles, two ways. And so in order for that to be effective, we have to ensure that our communities are involved in the training and recruitment of our officers all the way through, including substantive review upon infraction. And so in my work, in my current position, we worked with organizations like the National Organization of Black Law Enforcement Executives and the COPS program, who have been trying to get into Baltimore, the Department of Justice COPS program. We've been trying to get in Baltimore and work with the police department. And so we can begin to implement some of these tactics that would include cultural competency training, that would include de-escalation training. And those are things we're not seeing right now in our police officers' training and recruitment. And until we begin to move in that direction, we'll continue to see errors or missteps happen and a lack of trust between the community and the officers. Right now, our officers expect community members to hold other community members accountable when they break the law, but yet they aren't holding other officers accountable when they break the law. And so there needs to be a mutual respect that has to occur to restore those relationships.
That is Joshua Harris, one of the Green Party candidates who's here with us on Midday this hour. I'm Sheila Cast. We heard earlier from David Marriott, and now I'm turning to Emmanuel McCray about what your policing platform is.
My policing platform, it's not an overnight thing. I mean, living in Baltimore pretty much most of my adult life and growing around and in the area, I pretty much say it's time for, since we have 80% of our police, Baltimore City police officers live outside the city, I'm implementing a plan that any new police officers that wants to become an officer joining force is a requirement to live in the city for a certain amount of time, a minimum maybe at least 5 years before they want to venture out and live somewhere else. One, if you have more city police all living in the community, they'll probably take more responsibility, and if people want to know they have an officer in their neighborhoods, to hold everything accountable. I mean, even the issues are bigger than the police department and you know, my problem and the, you know, the problems with the city, because the economy is really messed up. And I mean, everybody's is failing in both ways and all, because you have so many people in poverty. You know, they're reacting to a certain way. Like, I was just yesterday, I was downtown on Redwood Street. I'm seeing, you know, young kids being disrespectful to police officers being disrespectful to them right on Redwood Street yesterday afternoon. And it's something that's going to have to rebuilding a relationship by bringing forth more programs of some sort. That's what I'll place into my administration. I just think it's something that's not going to happen, you know, overnight. But if elected, you know, it definitely will be one of my focuses to draw better relationships between both sides.
And I think that Emmanuel makes a great point. However, where I slightly differ at, and I'm originally from Chicago, and that's a city that requires their officers to live inside of the city. But they still have just as many issues with the police and community policing and community police relations. So understanding that there has to be a cultural shift that occurs in our police department, and that begins with the training aspect and component.
I want to follow up very quickly with David Marriott. You mentioned the importance of police living in the city. Would you, like Emmanuel McCray, make it a requirement that police officers live in the city?
No, you can't force people to live where they don't want to live, because for one, you're not going to have a police department that's going to want to do the job. One of the things you have to realize about police officers is we have to keep in mind that these are people that get up every day, they put a badge on their chest, okay, they put a gun on their hip, and they risk their lives to protect the community in which they work for. However, as I've said before, and if you go to my website, MarriottForBaltimore.com, you can read more about what my plans are. But you got to keep this in mind. Police officers are key to helping each community. It's what we teach them and what we tell them on how to police our communities. We can't use old tactics. We can't use old policing skills, okay? When technology changes, we have to change and we have to adjust. We have to learn how to use the new computers. We have to learn how to use the new cell phone. Nothing has changed in policing in so many years that police officers now are being the ones that are being accused of not doing their jobs or not doing their jobs or performing it in such a way. Perfect example. I'll give you a perfect example. The state of Maryland just passed a law recently saying that we need to pull over one lane over when an officer has someone pulled over on the side of the road. This is a safety issue for officers. This has always been a safety issue for officers. But from the beginning of time that we had police officers pulling people over in cars, why haven't we done this in over 100 years? It took 100 years for someone to pass a law that's so simple. We're not using common sense. We need to start using common sense. We need to start using actual methods that are going to work in policing communities.
Let me ask Joshua Harris. Let me ask Joshua Harris on this small point of whether or not, I don't mean it's small for the people involved, but would you require police officers to live in the city?
Legally, we can't require them to live in the city at this point, but we can incentivize them to. And so the goal of my administration would definitely be to incentivize our officers to live within the city limits, but that cannot go alone. As I said, it has to be a cultural barrier or a culture that is reshaped and rebuilt from the training and recruitment of our officers all the way through the process.
You have all, I think, to some degree or other, made development and specifically tax incentives for development part of your campaign. Emmanuel, briefly tell us what your position is on tax incentives like TIFs, taxes in lieu of tax incentive financing.
For me, I'm not really in depth, know too much about it, but what I do know is definitely people in the community should be included when that is being given out.
Well, how would you balance investment in the Inner Harbor and that part of the city with investment elsewhere in the city?
For me, I would basically say the same way where they took money away and shut down rec centers and shut down fire stations and fights that I've been fighting over the years, like Truck 10 and 24 rec centers have been shut down throughout the city. It's always money. If we can afford to give money and tax breaks to the elite, the same way we can pull money to give back to the communities of some sort. And that's been like the biggest problem in Baltimore is that so much of our money is being in the hands of developers, and they're getting rich and leaving a human cost of why we have depleted neighborhoods over in East, West, Northwest, and South Baltimore, and in East Baltimore, Northeast, and all over.
If we cut back on incentives for developers, will we lose development and lose jobs?
I don't believe so and all that. I say cut back. I mean cut back totally from them. But the problem is with the developments that we have, we need to ensure whatever development we have in Baltimore City, they definitely must include the community far as bringing forth jobs. Like if they're developing something, they're always hiring people outside of Baltimore City. I'll look at an example. When they built the casino, like 70% don't even live in Baltimore City, and all the Baltimore City residents who do work at the casino, they're supposed to bring all this money, they got the lowest paying jobs. And I think that's very wrong and sad that all the city government allowed this to happen and not have a contract in place to benefit our local city residents.
Okay, as I said, we need to take another short break. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about development and how to bring jobs to Baltimore with the three Green Party candidates who are with us, David Marriott, Emmanuel McCray, and Joshua Harris, and we'll look forward to your calls, too. But first, it is the last day of WIPR's Winter Pledge Drive. If that's news to you, here is Andy Bienstock to fill you in. Welcome back to Midday. I'm Sheila Cast. We are talking with three Baltimore City mayoral candidates today, Emmanuel McCray, David Marriott, and Joshua Harris. They are competing for the Green Party nomination. Do you think Baltimore City would benefit from a Green Party mayor? Join our conversation. Call us at 410-662-8780, 410-662-8780, or send us an email at midday@wypr.org. We were talking about development, and so let me pose the same question to David Marriott. What would be your approach to balancing investment in the Inner Harbor with revitalizing underserved areas of the city? David?
Hi, thank you. Yes. In order to invest in our city in different areas, we have to create income. Everything that we do is tax-based. If we don't have income coming in from a certain area, we can't reinvest in that community. So the first thing that we have to do is we have to make it more attractive for companies, for instance, like Amazon that came into Baltimore and given thousands of people in our communities, in these inner city communities that we're talking about, jobs. They've given these young people hope. They've given these young people opportunity. As mayor, I will approach other companies and ask them to come to our city. We would give them incentives and say, hey, look, you know, we'll give you a tax break here for this long period of time, to give them the opportunity to come here and build. Once we do that, we have a tax base that's built with our citizens. Our citizens then would say, well, I'm making money here in Baltimore. I don't want to commute back and forth from wherever they're commuting from, or they can buy within their community. they would then purchase homes, creating more of a tax base. It all starts with income, and we have to generate income in order to grow. We have to provide jobs. People have to be willing to come and live in the city for a reason. We have to give them something.
Okay, I appreciate that view. Let me pull Joshua Harris into this. You've been working on this issue a lot.
Yes. So this is where I totally differ from David as well. I am no longer interested in the corporate welfare that our tax incremental financing system has continuously perpetuated. And what I mean by that is I say often that the single greatest issue in Baltimore City politics is distribution of capital or the lack thereof. Who gets it and who doesn't? And so for administration after administration, all the way back to Thomas D'Alessandro's first term as mayor, we've only seen investment in downtown and Inner Harbor while the rest of Baltimore has been allowed to crumble, and our neighborhoods have been fighting and scraping for every single grant dollar that they can find on their own to try to sustain their communities. And that has to change. It's time for us to invest in all of our neighborhoods in Baltimore and ensure that we're creating healthy, sustainable, and economically viable communities. And so when I say corporate welfare, particularly referring to tax incremental financing, what I mean is this. We take wealthy developers and we give them our tax dollars, our public tax dollars, with the hopes that at some point in time we'll reap profit from them paying taxes in the long run, 20, 30 years, depending on the deal. However, what we're missing out on is the opportunity to create real jobs and living wage job opportunities for our citizens right here in Baltimore. One of the most recent tips was given out to La Cité to do the Center West development, where our city council pre-approved $54.6 million up front, $120 million over 15 years to go into this development. The first thing that developer did was went and hired a construction company from Pennsylvania. We have people right here in Baltimore City that can do that work. Again, with our most recent TIF that the city gave away, we gave $17.5 million to one of the wealthiest developers in the world to develop a building for the biopark, while one block over, some of the highest concentrations of poverty exist, and they were excluded from being a part of the community benefits agreement. They specifically requested that the Poppleton Training Academy be established, which is one of the ways that tax and financing can be used for to establish a school. The Poppleton Training Academy would train people in construction, green jobs, and hospitality, knowing that there's going to be a need for people to work on the current project, the next project, and the project immediately following would be an extended stay hotel. So those would have created jobs immediately for people in the community and trained them for those jobs. And so until we really begin to understand the history of what has been done with our tax financing policy, meaning that what the Baltimore Development Corporation does is take our public dollars and uses them for private interests that the public doesn't benefit from.
I want to shift gears and ask, we had a caller who could not stay with us who asked, what is your policy about drug treatment versus locking people up? David Merritt, I'll start with you.
Okay, first let me just make a quick comment in regards to what Josh just said. I didn't say anything about bringing corporate companies to Baltimore. I said inviting companies. There's many other companies that are owned by individuals like myself and different people that would be locally owned and people that will hire people. So that right there is a whole different ballgame. We're talking about a whole huge scale here. Now, in terms of drugs, dealing with drugs is a health issue. It needs to be looked at as a health issue. There are people that are addicted to opiates, for example, that have been in different surgeries, different situations, some circumstances, that don't want to be addicted. Then if given the opportunity under the health care vise of things, would be able to get away from that addiction, okay, and continue to live a very prosperous life. You don't want to hurt someone because they're going through something, give them a criminal record, and then now hinder that person from ever growing again. And this is what's happening in Baltimore. You have someone that has an issue. Okay, they're arrested by the police. It creates a label on that person.
I'm going to move on to Emmanuel if you've made your major point. Emmanuel, how should we be dealing with drug addiction in Baltimore?
Right now, from my take is, I guess, it's continue our process because the problem with the drug addiction here is really bigger than Baltimore City. You know, we live in the United States here of America and all that. There's no way drugs should have been here from the start, and whoever the powers that be that put it, you know, into the neighborhoods, has got to continue the process of working with the people who's dealing with it sustaining the best way it can. That's the only way I can see fit, unless we can, because it's a losing war on it at the end of the day. Unless the federal government gets involved and legalize it or eradicates it, you know, it's all about just continue that. I mean, that's the only way I can see it fit on that, ma'am.
Joshua Harris?
Well, I actually lived in Norway where I had the luxury of studying their addiction treatment policy as well as their criminal justice reform policies. And so understanding that and seeing that, it is an issue of public health and needs to be dealt with as such. And there are options, and there's a bill right now in the legislation on the state level that's going to propose injection sites where we have nurses and medical staff on hand for people to go and safely, at least to minimize the danger or the repercussions of transfer of STDs and other diseases that would occur through needles. And so that's an option. But making sure that we are investing in programs that provide wraparound services and identify the root causes. An individual doesn't just go into addiction because there's something that triggered it. And I'd be willing to go out on a limb and say that a large portion of that is the loss of jobs and living wage jobs in Baltimore City when the industries left Baltimore, because a job is much more than an individual's way of earning money. It's the sense of how they define themselves. And if you don't have that, you are lacking in that self-esteem. And so understanding that, we really need to focus on the root cause, and that's addressing the issues of poverty, again, to give people the opportunity to earn living wages and invest in programs that will fund those wraparound services that will help identify those triggers.
We are going to have to wrap up in a few minutes, and I want to make sure you've each sort of put your A game on the table. Let me ask each of you to take a moment to tell us what is the issue that is most important to you as a candidate, and perhaps the issue, I mean, there are only about 1,000 registered Green Party voters in the city of Baltimore. So what is the issue that will make a broader group of people than the registered Greens turn to you as mayor? Emmanuel?
For me, you know, it's basically simple principles and stuff that needs to be addressed and be done. I mean, just like Josh talking about, we definitely need living wage. We need more permanently affordable housing. We need better public services. Education and community control, all this for our economics definitely needs to be changed and all that, because like I said, it's pretty much where our money goes. And being if elected, that would be my purpose, to see that the people's needs come first. We have a lot of people who run for office, talk a good game and all, but at the end of the day, when they get in office, they look out for the people who funds them and all. And that's the problem we continue having here in our local and abroad, you know. And that's basically what I just want to end off. For anybody who's listening, if you want to look for a candidate who's going to be about you, that's what Emmanuel McCray is about. You can look for me at McCrayForThePeople.com.
And we will link to all of your websites from the Midday page at WYPR.org. David Marriott, in a minute, what is the issue that is most important to you as a candidate and that you think will bring voters to you?
I have the acronym of JEPO. It's Justice, Education, Peace, and Opportunity. Those are the four things that I'm going to focus on as mayor. Once we have justice, meaning we can provide a safe environment for our citizens, people wanting to come and live and work in Baltimore City, we provide education for our young people, giving them the opportunity to grow within the communities, to buy back into their communities and work in their communities, creating a larger tax base. That's the goal. That is what's going to change Baltimore forever. We need to have peace. No one wants to be unsafe. Right now, you go to Baltimore, you can ask anyone. No one feels completely safe unless you're in a certain area. People that live in these communities are afraid, and we need to create opportunity. We need to have jobs. We need to create business owners, and we have to start now.
David Marriott, thank you. Joshua Harris, you get the last minute.
Well, I believe that we are at a unique turning point where we need leadership that's going to be transparent, accountable, and responsible to the city. And Emmanuel brought up a great point. We have leadership that says one thing, but when presented with opportunities to do just that and create jobs, they don't do it. They allow another tax break for a corporation without a community being included in a community benefits agreement. And so we need leadership that's unafraid to go against the grain and do what is right for the city and for all of the citizens of the city, regardless of party affiliation and regardless of what the status quo is. And I'm running as a Green Party candidate because I'm unafraid to go against the grain to do what's right. And I, quite frankly, I look forward to being the next mayor of Baltimore City and working with a largely Democratic council and a Democratic state legislator so we can really push the progressiveness and the progressive change that occurs in Baltimore city. There's an amazing dynamic that can occur there because the Green Party is a very progressive party, and working with the Democratic Council and the Democratic State Legislature excites me and excites me for the possibilities for our city. And so we need leadership with vision that can really push our city forward, and I'm the person for that.
Thank you. Thank you all. Joshua Harris, Emmanuel McCray, and David Marriott. The Green Party will host a meet and greet with the candidates on March 19th. Visit the midday page on WIPR.org for more information about that. The Green Party will accept ballots by email and then hold in-person voting in its primary on May 1st. You must be registered green by April 5th. That's 4 weeks from today in order to vote in the Green Party primary. I'd also like to thank the Veranda for providing lunch for midday's guests. It serves farmers' markets in and around Baltimore. The Veranda features homemade Indian street food with vegetarian and vegan options. More at theverandabaltimore.net. And thank you for listening. Tune in tomorrow. I'm Sheila Cast.